Sherry, and today I'm going to be talking about the problematic portrayals of women in 18th century literature. Now, to be clear, these are only really problematic by today's standards, and these are just issues that I personally found when reading multiple novels and watching one film that I'm going to talk about, just in their portrayals of women throughout them. Now, before we begin, I just wanted to apologize for my voice. I am a little bit sick at the time of recording this, but I don't think it will take away too much from the content, so we're just going to power through anyways. First thing I wanted to talk about here is going to be the story of Orinoco by Ofra Ben. This is the story of a royal slave and his love in Moenda. This is a story I really wanted to focus on because I think in this story in particular, the women are really seen as objects and only as objects. One of the main places I think this is demonstrated is in terms of the cast of mistresses. I picked out one quote I really wanted to look at. It goes as follows: "And certainly nothing is more afflicting to a decayed beauty than to behold in itself declining charms that were once adored, and to find those caresses paid to new beauties to which she once laid claim, to hear them whisper as she passes by, 'That once was a delicate woman.'" Now, as I stated before, this quote is in reference to the cast mistresses. In this novel, the cast mistresses are people who are assigned to sort of like take care of the king and essentially please him. At least that's what it seemed like to me. And an important detail about these cast mistresses is that they sort of age out of this. And we don't know the exact age because the author never tells us. But at one point, they reach an age where they're too old, and then they start to train the younger girls in this. I think it's particularly interesting to look at the word choice here, specifically the words decayed and declining. And while a human is something that can literally decay when they are dead, I don't think that that's really a way that you would want to describe somebody's beauty unless you're really objectifying them. Because when you think of decay, you think of something that's more of an object at that point. It's no longer alive. It has no agency. And I think that's a main point in this novel, is that the women just have no agency at all. And yes, this was a novel that was pretty progressive for women at the time, but it's still just kind of shocking to read nowadays. One of the other things that like really bothered me in terms of objectification of women in this novel was in Moenda herself. There's one quote I picked out that I wanted to talk about in particular. It goes as follows: "But here in the arms of a feeble old man, my youth, my violent love, my traded arms, and all my vast desire of glory avail me nothing. In Moenda is as irrecoverably lost to me as if she were snatched by the cold arms of death. Oh, she is never to be retrieved." Looking into the word choice here again, I think that the words retrieved and snatched are really important to look at in particular because it's just a blatant objectification of women. In this story, Moenda is really only seen as a prize for Orinoco to win. He's always seeking after her in one way or another. She has no agency of her own. It's actually kind of upsetting to read, especially as a woman in the 21st century. But I digress. This book does have a female author, which is kind of insane for the time. But I don't really think that that matters. And my point in saying that is that she's an unreliable narrator. Much of the story literally has to be made up. There's no way that this man, Orinoco, disemboweled himself and then lived. I would also say that just as a woman, her descriptions of women are pretty problematic. And her descriptions of people of color are even worse. But I think in particular, her descriptions of these cast mistresses and saying that their beauty is decaying and stuff like that is particularly interesting because you know that when you're reading this book, you're reading it from her head, and she makes that very clear as she's continually inserting herself in this novel, making you aware that she is the author. She experienced these things. So I think it's important to note that, especially since we are only in her head the whole time. So where is she getting this idea that these women feel like they're decaying if it's not from her own mind? That's a little unsettling to say the least by today's standards. I will say having a black male and black female love interest in a novel was probably pretty progressive for the 18th century. Now the next story I wanted to touch on is a shorter one titled Inkle and Yargo. This is the story of a white man and a Native American love interest. Now I will say in this story, it's very similar to Orinoco in the fact that the women are seen as objects, but in this, Yargo actually has a lot more agency than Imoenda has. It's a bit less problematic, I would say, but only in this sense. We can see this agency demonstrated by Yargo in this novel, as she's the one that's really taking care of Inkle. Unlike in Orinoco, where he's the one taking care of Imoenda and going after her and spoiling her in goods and stuff like that. It really is a reversal of the roles. Until the ending. Now, the ending of this story is so problematic, I can't even begin to explain. But I will try. So I pulled out a quote that I wanted to look at in particular. It goes as follows. upon which considerations the prudent and frugal young man sold Iago to a Barbadian merchant, notwithstanding that the poor girl, to incline him to commiserate her condition, told him that she was with child by him. But he only made use of this information to rise in his demands upon the purchaser. Now, I know the language can be a little bit hard to break down in some of this older writing, but essentially what he's saying here is that Iago tells him that she's with child, and then he decides to just sell her for more money because he can make money on her body and the child's body. Now, in the story, Inkle comes to this conclusion that he needs to sell her because he's wasted his time in falling in love with her, or I guess I would argue that he was never in love with her in the first place, but I digress. Inkle decides that he's wasted too much time in the Americas, and so to earn that time back and essentially get paid for this, he sells Iago after making her pregnant with his child, which is something that I can't really begin to wrap my 21st century brain around at all. It is something that makes me so unbelievably uncomfortable. I cannot believe that this was ever published. I mean, I understand that this is like a different time, this is 18th century literature, but how do you just have such a switch up like that? I also think it's particularly interesting in how the male characters are framed in these stories. So in Orinoco is a hero. There are many points in the novel that we see Orinoco do heroic things. We're told he's a hero and we're shown it. But in Inkle and Iago, we are never shown that Inkle is a hero. We are only told that Inkle is a hero. He never does anything heroic. In fact, I would argue that selling your wife and child is anything but heroic. He's not heroic in any sense of the word. And I would say that these portrayals of men really reflect on the women in their stories, because they're the ones that are doing the objectification in the end. So when we look at it this way, it's kind of clear that Iago and Imelda are more similar in other ways. They weren't the heroes of their stories, despite Iago having more agency. Both of them still had no agency in the end, as Iago's just sold as soon as they get back to his like motherland in Inkle and Iago. And I find that to just be a little bit unsettling, if I'm being completely honest. Now, the next novel I wanted to talk about is titled The Female American. Now, this is by an anonymous author. This is allegedly written by a mixed woman. I will say that part of me doesn't want to believe that for a lot of reasons. And I will say that this is said to be the female Robinson Crusoe, but I feel that this is a very different story from Robinson Crusoe. This is a story of a native woman who's wanting to convert people to Christianity. At no point does Robinson Crusoe want to convert people to Christianity. In fact, the whole novel is about his kind of fight with religion and getting used to this island, which I think is particularly interesting. I think this book tends to be more of a commentary on how women could have handled the situation that Robinson Crusoe was in better. So I think that in this sense, it's actually probably one of the most progressive books that we read, but I will say the problematic portrayal of women in this comes with the fact that Unca Eliza, our main character, is half native, and they paint her as grateful for Christianity to the point where she just wants to convert others to it. I think that this would be a lot less problematic if she was not half native and didn't come from her own set of beliefs, and they weren't trying to sort of force this narrative on our main character, who, I'll be honest, she does kind of accept it. Some quotes I wanted to look at here about kind of her converting other people to religion are going to go as follows. I further strengthened my resolution with this reflection, that an attempt to teach the knowledge of the true God to those who know him not was laudable and might not want a providential sanction. As to the human means, I knew I was tolerably well-principled in the theory of religion by my uncle's great care, as already mentioned. Now, this novel is told from Uncle Eliza's point of view, which I think is particularly interesting because this is the first story that I've talked about that is from a woman's point of view, which is extremely interesting to me, especially a woman of color. I think that's particularly important to note, and that's why I want to say that this is probably the least problematic portrayal of women that I'm going to be talking about today. We'll also say kind of framing a woman as the one doing the converting is really powerful in the end. You're thinking of this woman and she's the one doing all this work that we've seen men do in other novels and stuff like that. She's doing the Crusoe thing, but she's doing it a whole lot better than he did. In fact, she's doing it so much better she can convert the native islanders with no problem. She has no debate with her religion. She knows what she wants and she gets it. And I really have to respect this character for that. I think she's particularly interesting to look at. My only issue with this is that her nativeness makes it feel like maybe she shouldn't be as into Christianity as she is, just historically speaking. I feel like a lot of the times in novels, like, these native people tend to get silenced, and that's why I don't really believe that this book was written by somebody who was native. I believe that they could have been mixed and a woman by any means, but I don't believe that they were at all native, because I think that anybody who was native living this time would not have written a book with this tone. That's just my personal opinion. I could definitely be wrong. So yeah, the only real issue with this novel doesn't really come from the fact that she's a woman. In fact, I would argue that she's a very strong female narrator. It's really interesting to read from her point of view. She definitely knows what she wants. She goes out and gets it. She's so strong, in fact, that she wants to convert others to her religion, and props to her for doing that. But I just don't feel like this is a character rooted in nativeness. You don't feel that at any point, and I think that that's where the problematic portrayals come in. And I think if we look at the fact that she is a woman, you can kind of take this, like, Pocahontas view to it, where, like, Disney kind of took this idea of Pocahontas and turned it into this, like, idealized version of what she wasn't, where they were grateful for these, like, white people that came over and embraced them, when that was not the case at all. And I feel like this novel in particular can kind of fall into that romanticization of, like, I feel like this novel in particular can kind of fall into that romanticization of converting people in a lot of ways, but I do think it is interesting that it is a female doing that, and I don't want that to get overshadowed by other things that I'm saying, so I am going to move on before I get too off my point. Now, the last thing I wanted to talk about was the 2013 film titled Belle. This is another one that's pretty progressive, but it's also a dramatization of real-life events, based loosely on, like, real life, I would say. The women in this film are kind of seen as defined by their status. Dido, in particular, struggles with understanding how her class status and her skin color seem to go hand in hand when they really shouldn't. She's wealthy, and that's all people really look at. She's wealthy and she has the title, and that's all people really look at Elizabeth for, and not even her wealth, it's really just her title. So it's kind of hard to just watch it from, like, a 21st century perspective and see this woman who is mixed struggle so much with her identity because she's never been represented, and she feels like she'll never find love in that sense. Now, I will say where this movie gets kind of problematic is not no fault to the film at all. I think this was just kind of part of the time. The women in this film just have no agency at all. Elizabeth's only goal is to get married so she will be wealthy and therefore respected. And it's overall just kind of a problematic time for women. But I also don't want to discredit how powerful it is to have a woman of color be fighting this battle against slavery throughout the film. I think that that's a really, really interesting narrative. And I think that her kind of relationship with, as we called him, Walmart Darcy in the film was particularly interesting to look at, because he's somebody that really cares for her, and we don't see this in many of our other stories. I mean, even in The Female American, you don't want her to get with her love at the end. You don't want her to get with him at all. It's really actually hard to read the ending of that novel. But in this, you kind of celebrate the ending. You're like, wow, she's actually being loved and appreciated. Even though I would say that this was kind of a problematic time for women in general, I think that this story of Dido is a particularly interesting one to look at, because it's just so cool to see a woman of color being represented in this way. And the fact that it's based on a true story just makes it a little bit more exciting, in my opinion. Now, I just wanted to conclude this before we get too out of hand here by saying that I do think that 18th century literature is really important to study, because I think it's important to understand where different thoughts and ideas stem from. And I also think it's incredibly important to look at it from both an 18th century perspective and a modern day perspective. So I think it's important to be able to recognize when things are just flat out problematic and never should have been allowed, versus when things were allowed in the time and we need to recognize that now. But I do think that looking at it from a 21st century mind is important too, just so we know things that we shouldn't be repeating nowadays, especially in terms of racism in these novels, but also in the misogyny that's really woven throughout them. So yeah, thank you for listening. I hope you have a great day.